council meeting for Tuesday, January the 8th, 2019, at 6 p.m. is hereby called to order. Under 2.0, changes approval of agenda. We have no changes to the agenda to present. Are there any other changes to the agenda this evening? If not, a motion to approve the agenda is circulated would be in order. Moved by Councilor Mews, seconded by Councilor Fisk. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Moving on to 3.0, we have presentation this evening. Under 3.1, we have North Queens Ground Search and Rescue. I would ask Stephen Hopper, and if you have a colleague with you, certainly you may come forward to the presentation desk.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, everybody. I think you've been given an electronic copy of our presentation, so I will go through it very quickly for the benefit of the other people in the room, and then be available for whatever questions you have. Would you like also my name and address and things for the record? Okay. This started a little while ago when our counselor asked me a question if we were part of the Liverpool Ground Search and Rescue Team. And I said, no, we are an independent team. North Queens has the opportunity of having two independent ground search and rescue teams in the county. So we were established in 1984 as an independent team. We have approximately 20 members. We've been stable at 20 members over that time. Of course, we've lost a few, gained a few. We have been participating in an average of 2 to 3 searches per year. This past year, we were actually involved in 6 searches, 2 here in Liverpool in support of the Liverpool team, 4 in other areas of the province, because as the fire departments, we have a mutual aid agreement with all of the search teams in the province. So if they require more resources, we will help them out and respond to their call. Normally, a call out would be initiated by the RCMP for a lost or missing person. We have a call, we send out electronically a call to our members and then respond to whatever location the RCMP has asked us to respond to. In days gone by, most of the search and rescue operations were done all sort of map and compass. Guys who knew the woods went out and searched for people. Most people will have an idea of a great big long line of people walking through the woods looking for a lost person. That doesn't happen anymore because we just don't have the resources for that. Technology today has come to the point where on our command center, where we have 4 or 5 people, they're each sitting in front of a computer screen. And we have our radio communications are controlled by a computer. The mapping is controlled by another computer. The planning is a third computer. So we've got all of these resources that we have to more efficiently locate the lost person. The other thing that has changed over the last number of years is mostly we were, when we started, North Queens was started by the Hunters and Landowners Association, because most of the people we were looking for were hunters. Since that time, the province has put in a requirement that anybody with a hunting license must take a hunter safety course, which includes some compass and map work, also includes some survival skills for the woods. With the invention of the GPS, most hunters take the time to learn how to use the tool, and we don't usually look for hunters now. Most of the time, we are looking for dementia-type children or despondents. Those are our three main ones now. Although the last two searches I was involved with were both hunters in their 60s, so it changes and it stays the same. We have been surviving with funding from local fundraisers that we put on. Also, we have, as a team recognized in the province gives each team $3,000 per year. The fundraising that we do takes the care of the rest of our operations. So by operations, there's fuel for our vehicles, course costs for training, because we are now, again, everything becoming more modern. We have a national CSA standard where all the teams in the country are now at the same level. So we are required to train and to practice to that level. So all of our training costs and stuff, none of these, this is all done by fundraising and some very nice donations we have had in the past, and also the $3,000 from the province. A number of years ago, we were generously given a parcel of land on Hibernia Road that we could use as a base. And also a number of years ago, the council here approved that our insurance for our vehicles be paid by the council. So that's the total of our funding. What we spend in the run of a year on operations is approximately $10,000. What we have for fundraising and stuff is about $5,000. So there is a shortfall there. What we are asking for now is to get some permanent funding in place so that we can try and meet the CSA standards, maintain our equipment properly. Our bus that are for our command center right now is 1971, I think. We do have one in the works right now to replace it, but that's 2007. So we're working with old vehicles, donated vehicles. It's a cost, they're much higher to cost to maintain, things like that. So in the end, we would like to get, our hope is to get some kind of structure on the Hibernia property so that we could maintain our vehicles better by putting them inside. Also having some kind of a heated storage area, because all of these computers and everything can't be left out in the cold and freezing. We also have some very expensive radios that need to be maintained. Right now we rent a space for our meetings and training, so that's the other thing that we would like to get help with, along with all of the electrical costs and stuff we're paying right now. We would like to bring in an internet connection so that we can keep all of our software up to date and that kind of stuff. Right now we depend on members taking our laptops home, and if they have an internet connection in the rural areas, getting it updated that way. So that's our request for that. The money right now is I guess the terminology is a line object or some kind of ongoing assistance from the municipality in addition to our insurance money that we have now. I'm open to any questions.
Any questions or comments of councillors, of Mr. Hoffman?
Yes.
Thanks for the presentation, and let us know what's going on out in North Queens. As far as I did know that you had the ground search and rescue, and knew you were separate from Liverpool. But what is your relationship with the Liverpool ground search and rescue?
What do you mean?
Well, you obviously share resources at any point, or equipment, or anything like that. I mean, you're mutual aid for one another. Is it the case that if you get a call in North Queens, you would notify Liverpool, or vice versa, to be on alert for that mutual aid if required?
Yes.
Okay.
They have certain types of equipment that we don't have. For example, they are actually the only team in the province that has a side-looking sonar for their boat. which we use for the fatalities that occur. So they are on call for the whole province for that particular resource. Yes, if we require people, and we usually do, we are a small team, 20 people, we would have to get 100% turnout in order to run a long-term search. All of the searches I've been involved with over the last 17 years have involved more than one team.
Okay, thank you.
Any other councillor? Councillor McLeod?
Thank you for your presentation as well. You presented us with the capital plan. This is money that has already been raised for these projects?
No.
Or is it money that you're hoping to acquire?
This is what we feel we would need to have in order to properly provide the service that we provide. We have a small capital budget right now. The first item on that list, the $7,000 that we are currently spending on refurbishing a new command center. That we have the funds for now.
That's a school bus?
That is the 2007 school bus, yeah.
And I see on the flip side you had one for $15,000. Is that the same school bus or is that an additional money that's the trailer part of it?
Yeah, no, that's the replacement because I don't expect the school bus to last all that long.
Okay.
What I would like to get, the team would like to get a separate trailer which we can keep, because right now a school bus to go through a motor vehicle inspection is anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500. And a trailer is a lot less. We can get a 22-foot trailer, outfit it as a command center, and then we have that command center for as long as that trailer can last. Now, if we are able to get a new one, then obviously we would have that for 10, 15, 20 years. You think about the RVs that you see around, they're around for a long time, so.
And I see these budget items are from current 2018 with previous year up through to 2023.
Mm-hmm.
So, one other question, that is, you say that you're doing ground search and for the province as well.
Mm-hmm.
So do you get provincial money to help with that? Or do you use all your resources that you acquire here in Queens for that?
We get
any funding from the province?
Yes, the $3,000. Each team in the province gets $3,000 per year. That's it.
Does the municipality provide you with anything other than your insurance?
At the present time, no.
No, just the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks.
All right.
Councillor Johnson?
Steve, good presentation. Thank you for my learning curve on this, because it's a little bit more difficult to understand than just a couple pieces of paper. And most important, thank you for the service you do. But just a clarification, and I know the question was asked by Deputy Mayor Kelly about your association with Ground Search in Liverpool. I'm assuming you have a similar partnership with the folks in Annapolis.
And yes.
From a local perspective, what's your working relationship with the North Queens Fire Services and how you share resources with those guys? And a clarification piece on my part, that the $8,400 you're asking for has nothing to do with your capital program.
No.
It's just your operating program.
That's the operating, yeah. Okay. In order to clarify that, in order to maintain our qualifications under the CSA standards, we are required to participate in at least 3 searches per year. Now, if we don't get called, they will allow us to use what they call a mock search. So that's a large-scale exercise where we're actually going out and doing the skills, practicing our skills. So as a searcher, you have to maintain your certification, you have to do 3 of those per year. So this is where a lot of the training comes in, and also our certification under for medical, like the St. John Ambulance or Red Cross or Royal Life Saving Society, because we do have people who are qualified for water rescue and ice rescue. So we have to maintain all of those qualifications as well. So to answer a couple of your questions, the North Queens Fire Department, they have a side-by-side and they have first responder trained people. Now that side-by-side only goes to certain areas. The search and rescue team has a all-terrain stretcher where we can take it into completely inaccessible. The last time I used it, it was in the middle of about a kilometer and a half diameter alder swamp, which there's no way you're going to get a side-by-side in there to get the medical treatment out. So we get a path in there, cut the trees out, get a path in there, haul the person out to where we can get them with the fire department, then transfer them over to the fire department. They, with their agreements with the medical EHS, transfer to the ambulance. So that's where we have theirs. When they have a an issue that is around water and they require our boat, they call us and we go with the boat to support them in their issues. So it works, it's working both ways. And right now we're trying to get communications worked out, whereas their radio systems and ours aren't quite compatible. We're trying to come up with a protocol for making sure we have communications between the two services.
And you also work with KG Park too?
Work with KG Park as well, yes.
Thanks.
Councilor Fisk?
Thank you for the presentation. A quick question. When you go into a large search with the different organizations in the province, how long would the stay be? How roughly? Is it days? Is it a couple of days? Is it one day?
The last large one where we had multiple stays was the Spider Lake search in Halifax. That search went on for 6 days.
So during that time, I understand the province kicking in $3,000 a year for each unit. Do they kick in extra money at that time for long periods of time?
The province does not. The RCMP does.
The RCMP kicking in?
Yeah. Yeah. If they call us, if the RCMP calls us for a lost person.
Federal, wouldn't it?
No, I think they're considered a provincial police force in Nova Scotia. So, okay. But I'm not sure how their funding is worked out, honestly. But we can put in expense claims for long-term searches and mileage. At the Spider Lake search, we had people there who had to have overnight stays because you can't have a person out working 12 hours or 8 hours a day, go out for 12 hours on a search, and then expect them to drive home.
Exactly.
So there's a safety issue there that you can't do that. So we have an overnight stay that's claimed for that.
Well, God bless you for all the good work you do. Oh,
thank you.
Councilor Fanson?
Yes, Steve. I looked at the here, you say that your most pressing need is to get a shelter for your vehicles and your motorized equipment.
Yeah.
So you fellows are operating without any kind of a building, any kind of a place to, or even, like, I can think like your boats and everything would get ice, water, everything else, and then because they're outside without, so you have no protection for them at this particular time.
Last year, we were able to get one of these Canadian Tire fabric garage things that we now keep our boat in, because we want to make sure that the fire department and us have immediate access. The other thing is we have an 8x8 Graves barn that we bought secondhand that we have on our property that is for storage for fuel and that kind of stuff that we can't store in, but that's it.
Okay, so when you're looking at this money, one of the biggest things you're going to be doing is trying to get some kind of a structure up.
That's correct, yep.
Any other councillor have a question or comment? Deputy Mayor Kelly?
I'd just really like to understand a little bit more about the history. We have for Queens County anyway, because we have two ground search and rescues units in Queens County.
Mm-hmm.
And was the Liverpool Ground Search and Rescue already here when you started in 1984, when you started the one up in Caledonia or North Queens?
I'm not 100% sure when they started.
Okay.
It's around the same time.
Right. what was the advantage of starting another ground search and rescue at the time? Obviously, there must have been a need for it, and I do understand, you know, the whole area. I can assume that, you know, there was a need for it. I'm just trying to understand, you know, with the duplication of equipment that everyone has when you're all in mutual aid anyway, what would be the advantage of having one in North Queens as well?
Travel time. You have an hour to get a command center from here to Caledonia. And very often, well, the last search we were on was west of Lake Rosignol.
Right. So how far are you away from the one in Annapolis County or the next one on the other side, ground search and rescue?
About the same. We are right in the middle of the province.
Right.
So it's equidistant from Annapolis Royal, Liverpool.
So are they all around the province approximately 1 hour away? Are there some that are more than an hour or closer than an hour away from one another?
The four teams in Halifax County are about the same distance. They're shorter kilometer-wise, but traffic and everything else makes it harder to get to. But yeah, it's about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Councilor McLeod?
I neglected to say that we certainly do appreciate the volunteer work the organization does, both in yours and South Queens as well. And it's really good to have you explain what you do for the community, and with limited resources that you have financially. And I think you're doing a fantastic job in that regard. But I understand that the housing of all this is so important to you. And up to this point, I can't imagine how you've ever gone through these years without having a structural kind of thing to keep everything all coordinated and everything housed in the same area. Because you have a lot of, now with technology, you have a lot of sensitive equipment and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, not just with the boats and with your vehicles and that sort of thing, but today's technology is generating easier methods of your service. But you know, it's you really need a home, basically, is what you need. And
mm-hmm.
You know that. And there's a lot of, not a lot, but there's a fair number that vacant buildings that have just come up over in your area recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also thinking of the Queens County Fairgrounds, whether you're able to utilize any of those buildings at any point in time, because we only use basically for one major event for a couple of years. So I didn't know whether there was any partnership between that group or not. But
we did. Investigate a lot of different buildings in the North Queens area. The fairgrounds, yes, it seems like it's only used one event a year. During the winter time, all of their buildings are full of trailers and boats and things that people don't have a place to store in their own yard, so they put them in there. Yes, yeah. So that was one of the things there. We have in the past been very fortunate that we've been donated time or place from various community members. We did have right beside Merriam Hunt Park, there used to be a building there. That used to be our home. So when that was declared
unsightly,
unfit, whatever, and demolished, that demolished our home. So there have been a number of places like that, and we've had our vehicles parceled out here and there to various members' own private residences if they had the capacity. But then there's a very critical time element then in getting everything together and trying to get, you know, and if they're not available at that particular time, then that piece of equipment is not available. So the other thing that I forgot to mention, and it is in our handout, but we are also in with the emergency measures here in the county for things like flood watch, the dry wells. We are the water distribution center for the dry wells in the northern part of the county, that kind of thing. So we are not only from the RCMP, we are also working directly for the council here in the county.
And you also assist in a lot of organizational events with doing, parking and all the security aspect of it, too, and we've done that.
We have done that, yes. Yeah.
Any other councillor have a question or comment? Well, on behalf of council, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Hoffman, for coming and presenting. We will take your request through the budget process, and I expect staff will likely reach out to you during that process for additional clarification.
Certainly, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will now move on to 4.0, tabling of petitions. We have no petitions to table today. Are there any petitions to table this evening? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions this evening. That brings us to 5.0, public question comment session. This is an opportunity for members of the gallery to speak. And I would ask that you please state your name, your address, and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less, please.
My name is Maggie Dickey, and my address is 134 Hillside Road, Hempel Park. I'll time myself. Good evening. To begin, I have to read my notes, I'm sorry. To begin, I would like to thank you, Mayor Daigle, for responding to my letter of concern regarding the potential of agriculture development in Liverpool Bay. I have continued to give this a great deal of thought, and tonight I will focus on a couple of points. It is a fact that climate change is altering our coast. Sea levels are rising, waters are warming, and storm surges are playing havoc with our coastal shores. This has been very evident at Beach Meadows, particularly in the last 5 to 6 years, where I have directly witnessed erosion of the beach bank, flooding of properties associated with the salt marsh, and increased temperatures of the water. The latter I actually have enjoyed with swimming for 6 weeks, but it's still a symptom of the climate change. Beach Meadows is a coastal community and the site of a beautiful, unique beach and an extraordinary salt water marsh. These areas have been identified as sensitive natural environments that require our attention and proactive steps. Coffins Island, Inlet Bay, and Outer Coast have the same designation. And this, by the way, as you know, has been identified strategy map. In an effort to update the planning strategy, you have contacted Uplands, and at the review meetings, and I went to a meeting last night and heard some of your comments, and the public feedback has placed, and this is quote, high value on our coastal areas and the natural environment, timeliness to very much define the region of Haiti. To this point, it is understood that there is no clear application by agriculture or other to expand. However, the scoping process ends March 7, 2019, and thereafter follows the very narrow time frame for intervention, if indeed a lease application occurs. Many feel it is important to gather info to maybe make a little noise for this and to look at some of the scientific data that has been released. And I think even that, we look at things that are more current in the last 3 years. It is also important to do this in a timely manner to be prepared. It may very well be concluded that due to external factors, such as climate change, protection of our beaches, salt water marshes, coastline erosion, that is not the time for the open-end aquaculture fishermen with their discharge of waste that interacts with the water environment in a destructive way. There are so many things in their infancy. The Nova Scotia revised legislation has we the first community that applied to the review process in, from our area. Transparency is still not there. We've got in the D3 website for getting information. Alternate still contains its terms, such as amenities. Adequate environmental assessment and scientific data. So all these things seem to be happening and are overwhelming, actually, when you start reading some of the information. With all the above, the timing just does not seem to be right. Another point, when I think of Liverpool Bay, I cannot be remiss in its historical significance. The history of the Mersey River, our First Nation people, the course of the 5 years, the gateway to Liverpool Bay is reflected in the region of Queens, municipalities, logo, signage, website, cultural celebration. And this is their broad identity. I leave you with the hope that you will do and show due diligence in reviewing this information and that you, I do believe you will show good governance to the region and that the words in the proposed vision that I heard just last night, and this is a quote, interconnection with and respecting the natural environment, quote, provide guidance and with that acceptance that collectively we oppose the infringement of open-end fish farms as this may create further potential risk to our environment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Dickey. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak? Yes?
Please. Brian Muldoon, 980 Brooklyn Shore Road, Beach Meadows. Dear Mayor and Councilors, thank you for the opportunity to speak. It wasn't that many months ago that I had no idea what happened beneath the nets of those open pen fish farms. What triggered my interest was a large container-type boat that showed up at Coffin Island site, thinking it was there to do repairs. I let it go until I heard it was an automatic feeder. Do you know what my first comment was? What will happen to the people who feed the fish now? I had no idea who operated the facility. Once I began searches, I became alarmed at what was happening below the nets. The more I read, the more I became passionate about this. An open mind, I tried to search for any positive outcome from having open pen fish farms, not only here in Queens County, but anywhere. Norway, British Columbia, Chile, Scotland, and so on. I really did try to see what benefits it brought to Queens County. When I heard of the expansion plus the installation of two more sites, I knew we would lose much more than what would we gain. The economic benefits do not outweigh the risks we face in our environment. I couldn't sit back. My first street protest was simple, quote, stop expansion of fish farms. I asked myself, what is this? What does that mean? I can't tell anyone what to do. So I wanted everyone to make their own decision. So I Googled some top subjects. Cook in the environment, cook in millions, cook in lobster, cook in Washington. I made a larger sign and stood at the busiest corner in Liverpool. The outcome was overwhelming. People taking pictures, media showing up, calls for interviews, horn tooting, thumbs up. I realized I wasn't alone and I had supporters. I needed a group, Protect Liverpool Bay. We started an email distribution list. We started a petition. We started media campaign. We started Twitter. We're just a few months here. Now we need your help. I know the province makes the decision through this aquaculture board,
I know you were looking at the province for other monies for other projects. I understand that. That doesn't mean you cannot take a lead role here. As a municipal politicians, you will find a way to get those monies without jeopardizing your beliefs that you have here. The majority of your constituents do not believe in this expansion, and we haven't reached out to all of them. We haven't canvassed anywhere. Please show your leadership here for the province. Be the municipality that steps up and protects the Liverpool Bay. Let all other counties in Nova Scotia know that you led this fight. Look at the bigger picture. It might not be tomorrow, but one day you will know it was you who represented Queens County, and that you took the stand with the people of Liverpool, and all those other counties will look up to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Muldoon. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak tonight? Let's go ahead.
Thank you. Paul Emick, 423 Long Cove Road, Port Bedway. Thank you for the opportunity to let me speak. I have some numbers here that quite surprised me when I put this together. I've heard that we're considering spending $4.5 million to divert some open pipe sewers that go into the Liverpool Bay into a waste treatment facility. Is this correct?
There will be a motion on the agenda this evening to request filing an application for that funding, part of which will be by grant and part of which will be by Region Queenstown.
Yeah, expensive, but a double cost. Do we know roughly how many households will be affected by how many households now equipped with the sewage into the pool bay? Is it 100, 200, 300, 500?
If we're looking at what we service as a municipal sewer collection system, we're doing mostly all of Liverpool other than the lower Waterloo Street project, which we're speaking about earlier, and part of Milton and most of Brooklyn and Sandyville.
So is it a few hundred households?
Probably a few thousand.
A few thousand. Did you know that untreated waste coming from the 400,000 fish at Coffin Island opened at Fish Farm today is, in terms of nitrogen, equivalent to a city of 40,000 people? That's a city 16 times the size of Liverpool. In terms of phosphorus, it's equivalent to a city of 50,000 people, which is 20 times the size of Liverpool. And in terms of feces, raw untreated feces, equivalent to a city of 130,000 people, 52 Liverpools. That's what we're putting in there now, and we're considering making it even worse. Now, if we're about to spend $4.5 million to treat the sewage from a few thousand households, why on earth are we allowing Fridge Farm to dump this amount of sewage into our beautiful ocean there? These are not my numbers. These numbers can be found in an article written by R.W. Hardy in Aquaculture Magazine. It's time to show some leadership. Let's do the right thing. Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak this evening?
Hi, my name is Annabelle Singleton. I'm at 105 Mickley River Road in the village. On December 21st, we held a sustainable bloom dinner at Port Arthur. That was a salmon dinner, $24. Got you a great salmon dinner. It was from Sustainable Bloom, which is a company that produces land-based salmon. I spoke with Kirk Haverstock today. He's the owner-operator and president of that company. They have 10 full-time, year-round local jobs, and they've been in operation for 10-plus years, doing other fish, 5-plus for the salmon. Since I have a real interest in sustainability, I've been active with this group, both from the pork grocer and my environmental consulting background. So I feel this is a subject worth pursuing and spending a lot of my free time doing this along with my two jobs. So I found a second land-based salmon production company here in Nova Scotia. We have two. We are now considered country, if not world, leaders with this sort of technology. The other company is called Cape Fiore Sustainable Seafood, and they're located near Advocate Harbor in the Carlsborough area. And again, they are producing from egg to plate, land-based farm salmon. It's their salmon is actually certified organic. They're using locally produced food from seafood that is being used, like it's the offcuts from other fish factories. So they take this fish factory, what would be waste otherwise, they're creating the pellets, they're feeding it to their fish. They are certified organic. So we have two companies in Nova Scotia that are proving this can be done. This is viable technology. And when I go to the Cook's Open House and I ask them about land-based, and you know, here they are, this giant company. And what are they doing? They're looking to our bays and inlets as an opportunity for them to use free what the ocean provides to them and to deal with their waste. So they're taking it from both ends and they are leaving us basically nothing because it's not a local company. They're a multinational company. What we do know is that they're out of New Brunswick. They bring workers from New Brunswick. Most all that product also leaves New Brunswick. It's not even processed here. So there's very, very little in this for us as a community. The other thing that's really interesting is we have this facility, this old Bow Water Mersey wastewater treatment facility. And from what I've been told, it has piped fresh water and salt water already in place. When I mentioned this to Kirk Haverstock from Sustainable Blue today, he was like, wow, what an incredible opportunity. You know, the feasibility is there for this. It's giant tanks, it's plumbed, it's the beginnings of a land-based facility. It is currently owned and operated by Harborside Commercial Park, which is the Nova Scotia Crown Corporation. It's the same group that manages the Port Mersey Commercial Park in Brooklyn. So they're sitting on this. It doesn't currently have a use. Wouldn't it be amazing if we could proactively start digging into this? We've got this opportunity here. Instead of sitting back and having this multinational corporation and the province dictate to us what sort of industry is in our midst, wouldn't it be amazing if we could look into this? And who knows? I mean, this whole Port Mersey commercial park, it's all about innovation. I mean, that's their mandate. That's what they're there for, creating local jobs and looking at new industries. And they even talk about like biotech. That's their thing. So this group in Overport is right there, right under our nose. Why? I don't know. Maybe I'm the one. Maybe it's someone else here in the crowd that takes this on and goes and talks. Or maybe council has a role here. I don't quite know who should do it, but I think it really needs to be done. I've also been told that there's over $500,000 of federal, provincial money sitting in an account somewhere that is potentially available for fisheries innovation. I haven't had a chance to look into this yet, but there's a good chance that money's going to disappear at the end of this fiscal year. So again, there's probably only a few months to get ourselves sorted and look into that money and possibly start putting together options as to what that could look like. When I spoke with Erica Brooks at Upland Studios and expressed, again, like, you know, here we are, we're going through this municipal planning strategy consulting process, and you know, how does all this tie together? Like, we as a community, as a county, should be able to put the proper protections in place to make sure that we are not being exposed to this multinational corporation's garbage and waste and disease. And I mean, the product they produce isn't even, it's not even safe. So, like, we really need to look at where we're putting our resources, our natural resources. And so, again, I ask for Mayor and Council to stand behind us in opposition. I know, like Brian said, you don't have the ultimate decision-making authority, but I think it's really, really important that you stand with us. We're not going to get any new science that says Liverpool Bay is a good place for these disastrous fish farms. So there is nothing that is going to come out of this scoping exercise that is going to convince me, for one, that this is a good place for an open pen fish farm. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Singleton. I would like to convey to those that are in attendance that the Region of Queens has had discussions with Nova Scotia Lands in the past regarding the former ASB site, as you spoke of. They are well aware that we would like them, if possible, to interest a aquaculture facility to do land-based aquaculture, and Nova Scotia Lands would embrace a company that would like to do on-land aquaculture at that site, and they would love to have a conversation with that company. So I would encourage anyone here this evening that has a proponent who thinks they may want to be involved on that site on land aquaculture, that Nova Scotia Lands would welcome that conversation. Thank you. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak this evening?
My name is Carol Green. So good evening, Council, as well, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Carol Green, and I live at 736 Eastern Short Road in New Meadows. I've lived here full-time now since 2012, and my property backs directly onto New Meadows Beach and abuts the waterways that flow into it. From the windows overhead, we can see the tide rise and fall in each Meadows Creek and the saltwater marsh next to our house. During the winter months, the overland water regularly comes up to within 20 feet of the side and back of our house. I can access the beach from our own property, and I walk the beach daily all year round. Like all the properties in each Meadows, my house relies on well water. Being in a rural and remote location, we also grow a lot of our own produce in our garden, and certainly one of the most valuable and important aspects of me living here is us being able to have an ocean beach and space for a garden in our backyard. To simply say that the pristine coastline is important to me is an understatement. So today, I'd like to express my concerns regarding the proposed expansion of the salmon farms in the Liverpool Bay. I could easily spend 5 hours doing so, and today I'm just going to, in my 5 minutes, just focus on what I think is the most obvious and relevant issue that's critical to this community and council's operations. You know, I strongly believe that the size, the location, and the long-term presence of these sea pens pose a direct threat to the water contamination, from the volume of waste created under the site and how that waste is dispersed by the natural flow of the currents. The shoreline of Liverpool Bay is populated. It's not vacant, undeveloped coastal land. Perhaps that's the case for some of the other feedlots in other locations. But in our case, the proximity of that existing feedlot in relation to sensitive environmental lands, conservation lands, as well as residential properties that are on well water, is extremely concerning. The abutting properties, including Beach Meadows Beach and residential properties, are directly exposed to seawater, both at the normal water line and from overland water that spreads inland, exactly what happens on my own property. As you all know, the municipality and its land use bylaws are responsible for protecting the lands and waterways from contamination. I've read and I'm familiar with the current bylaws and the council's policy outlined in the municipal planning strategy. There's an abundance of existing bylaws and policies directly related to this exact issue, protecting waterways from contamination. Regarding the existing site that shared its latest test from this past July and August, they confirmed that the ocean floor below the towns are clean, or tested clean. This implies there's no reason for anyone to be concerned. To me, these results only prove or confirm that the waste isn't stagnant, but rather it is being dispersed, which is kind of the point of my concern. At the Cook Open House I attended, I spent a lot of time speaking with two biologists at length. Started out with three of them, and one of them walked away quickly after he realized where my questions were leading. And after about 45 minutes of questioning them and really pressing them about the quantity of fish species and the effects on the nearby beach and the shoreline surrounding the area that they were scoping, their answers changed from "don't worry, that there will be no impact at all" to finally them admitting, "well, yes, it's possible there will be some impact." So separately, two different biologists that I spoke with said, yes, it is possible the waste from that site could flow up onto the beach. One even illustrated with a finger on the map that was on the table of where the water would flow. And little did she know, she was pointing directly to the beach. They weren't even aware of the beach. They had little concern. I walked over and I also spoke with their VP of communication, Joel Richardson. I shared the same concerns with him, and he quickly dismissed me and even laughed off my questions and other people's questions, which I was pretty shocked at. I also followed up and sent questions through their website, and I received no response. I also replied to them to one of Cook's tweets on Twitter that was boasting about the success of the open house in Liverpool. I tweeted that my concerns again. They blocked me from Twitter. I've been on Twitter for 10 years. Never been blocked. And I heard they blocked anyone else that mentioned anything negative about this expansion or their season operations. So today I've heard over and over again that this existing and proposed expansion, because it's sea-based, does not fall under municipal jurisdiction or responsibility because of that. And that there's nothing that they can do in regards to the decision for approving any future leases or expansion to existing facilities. Could satisfy provincial requirements. That's it. I've also been following the progress of the future clean planning project currently underway, and I attended the past two PAC meetings, including last night's meeting. During this meeting, various topics of land use bylaws came up, such as forestry and roads. And at times, committee members may have commented that provincially regulated, that's out of our hands. And Ian Watson from Uplands, who's one of the urban planning consultants, didn't agree with that attitude and pointed out to them there are areas that under provincial regulation are often and most definitely influenced by the concerns and requests of local municipalities. He says it happens all the time. So even if there are areas that are regulated provincially, most definitely the municipality can influence any decision or approval for development. As an urban planner, he sees it happens all the time. And it simply just comes down to how involved or aggressive the local municipality chooses to be. Further, he even commented, that you can create policies to support that kind of involvement, if that's what you'd like to have. You also went on to state that if the proposed development presents a potential risk to local environmentally sensitive land, endangered species, conservation land, etc., that the municipality has the right to ask for assessment from DNR, Department of Environment, and then to report those findings to the provincial parties that are regulating the decision. So I feel personally there are many aspects of this proposed fishfront development that are in conflict with the council's own planning strategy and their future vision for the region, and their most important goals for the sustainable future growth of change, which include, and including number 3 on that current list, which states that they'll encourage land development that protects the quality of the natural environment and safety of all residents, including maintaining safe drinking water supplies, establishing development setbacks for water courses, and recognition and protection of environmentally sensitive areas. Currently, there are no provisions in the region cleaning bylaws for aquaculture specifically. Even the land use support, because all of the sea-based operations do have a land-based component, even if it's just for storage. And it is quite different from traditional fisheries use. The region of Halifax, however, just for reference, do include aquaculture in their bylaws, and they differentiate specifically between traditional inshore fisheries use and large-scale intense aquaculture use. Under their resource zoning, the requirements for agriculture industrial use, I found extremely interesting. These requirements stipulate the following. Any area over 3,000 square foot area must be a minimum of 100 feet from the dwelling, must be 100 feet, a minimum 100 feet from a potable water source. They must be no less than half a mile from a residential zoning. This to me implies that the region of Halifax believes the equipment, storage of chemicals, of feed, etc., anything associated with this agriculture use, is for some reason not safe to be within the close proximity potable water. Yet here we are allowing this operation to take place in RC. And in this particular location, it's such close proximity to our shoreline. So I hope that reference and example highlights the seriousness of my concern, because these bylaws in Halifax municipality kind of enforce that concern. And I hope that the region of Queens also, moving forward, will implement new policies around this growing industry of aquaculture. And I think I've reached out and others have reached out to Uplands to express our concerns in this regard. And we're looking forward to working with them in providing input and making sure that in future these policies can be put in place to protect us and our resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Reed. Any member of the gallery would like to speak?
My name is Ann Moss, and I live at 19 Green Coast Road in Richmond. Happy New Year, Mayor and Councilors. I want to thank the Mayor and also Councilor Frelick for the time that they've taken to speak to me before Christmas, so that I was aware and that I could also pass on to members of our group the process that you were versed in Shelburne regarding aquaculture leasing and licensing. And I appreciate that very much. And so, I'm Val as well, who is so environmentally in tune. So I hope you know that our group is going to be very prepared. But what I want to say is something that I feel so strongly about also. And these are not just feelings, guys. It's coming down to the fact that everybody is recognizing the power of a municipal unit. When somebody outside in the citizens, within the citizens of our society here say, well, I need help with, you're our go-to. You're our go-to. And that, wouldn't you say that's for good reason? You're elected to do that, right? And I kept, I'm like Brian. Brian started me on this very curious mission of what is this all about. And I thank him, and I will always thank him, because I can't believe really where it's, the reading has all led. But there's very, very little with regard to open net pens that I would say is positive either. I agree with the mayor in that there's a lot of interesting technology coming on. But right now, that's not being done at the present site there. And there is no guarantee whatsoever that if there were new sites that we just said, oh yes, come, that they would employ these new things like warm water bath instead of use of pesticides or sea lice as a problem. Of course, we are very much proponents for land-based aquaculture. You can treat waste, you can minimize those kind of very detrimental effects on ecosystems and on the residents who are on the coast. And the fact is that Cook releases all this effluent. It's their fish, and their fish are valuable to them. And it was a great time for calculations, because we've had people calculating all over the place, the amount of effluent, how well council is trying to address human effluent in the bay, but yet can't, can you directly control what goes into your bay? You do have power to do that. It just depends on what you would make an issue. But here's what Cook wants. Here's what Cook is the bottom line. Cook has 400,000 fish, where they can carry that out in those pens, those working pens off Coffin Island. At 8 to 10 pounds, you guys know that they can be sold, they're sold at harvest for that amount. So let's say 15% is lost, it's culled to disease. So that takes 60,000 of those fish straight out of the picture. So we're left with 340,000 fish, each of those fish weighing 10 pounds. Over Christmas, True North sold per pound their farmed salmon for $10 a pound. And probably over in, that was local markets, so in other markets, they overseas, they probably would have gotten far more. So that leaves $34 million that they made on 340,000 fish. That's great, isn't it? No wonder they're winning the business awards. Holy cow. Like, that is awesome. Now, you, for them. But what is awesome for us? What is awesome for us when, yes, we're told that the ocean floor is clean, but that has all been diluted somewhere and traveled. They have no corporate social responsibility to us whatsoever if our wells are damaged. The offshore drilling exploration. Municipalities are being, you know, there's a coalition going around getting municipalities to support. And this was the hard copy of the South Shore Breaker on the 2nd of January. And who are all these municipalities that can support these people? Let's see. The town and municipality of Shelburne, the municipality and town of Lunenburg, the town of Mahone Bay, the municipality of Clare have all supported the call to support the members of the alliance that contain the Clean Action Ocean Committee. They're lobbying municipal units along the South Shore. What do they want? A moratorium on the drilling exploration. They don't want it. They're afraid.
they know it can impact things. And here's what one guy said. It was a fisherman, a lobster fisherman. He said, I went to a couple of meetings with a list of things that the seafood industry needs in order for the oil and gas industry to prove they can operate safely. The list of what we don't want the oil and gas activities happening near the most sensitive areas of our ocean. But here's what they said, and what I found so interesting. He said that they wanted the oil and gas industry to have some sort of insurance. They wanted them to contribute to an insurance that if the seafood industry was ruined, that this company would pay. They would pay. Just like if I went down and dumped something in to the bay, for all good reason, the RCMP should show up and charge me. Come on. I respect you guys so much, and I hope I don't come across as rude this evening, but I'm almost shaking. I can feel it, you know? The rule of thumb, organizations will not embrace transition until the pain is greater to stay the same than to explore change. These guys aren't being asked to change. There may be technology on the horizon, but it's not coming to Queens right now. And this is when this is going to be happening. I read an article by Russell Wangerski. He's out of Newfoundland. He wrote it for the Telegram, and this is what he wrote. And he was referencing the Placentia Bay huge salmon project that the provincial government wants to roll out there. And he said, it was titled Newfoundland Aquaculture Left Behind. And here's his first line in his article was, it sometimes feels that we are perpetually jumping onto a ship just about the same time as everyone else is abandoning it. And then he went on to say, sticking open water pens in otherwise pristine waters is beginning to look a lot like last year's technology. And we talked about technology, right? And technology, where the problems are obvious and the solutions to those problems are limited. Well, we know there are some solutions, but we don't know that those are coming here. There's no land-based facility coming here to pluck. They want to come and they want to pollute the bay. As the issues become more obvious, the opposition to open pen fish farms becomes louder. On January 4th, 2019, OFS Malloy, a Norwegian firm, they are land-based salmon fish farm producers, they have been given the nod for a land-based facility that will produce 15,000 metric tons. That will be their production of fish. And it's being called a milestone. You know what? We don't need to go on technology and ways of doing things that were frozen in time. It is time to say, something comes here, let it be beneficial. If it can operate here and people can make money, but it doesn't harm us, fine. If it doesn't harm our ocean environment and our marine species, fine. But if it's going to do harm, please, please, use your strong municipal voice. The province, you know, if they have an agenda, sure, but that doesn't mean that we don't speak. That doesn't mean we don't speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Law. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak?
My name is Eric Holden, 1036 Brooklyn Shore Road. Thank you for the chance to talk. First of all, I want to thank Donna and her group for putting together an excellent proposal and the council for accepting her proposal for the daycare. Donna and I got together looking for an alternative to that location. That's where we found each other, and after that, a little bit of research and so on and so forth, it certainly felt like the best place for her to be was back in that school. Her and her team are amazing. I hope I gave her the power, I guess, if you wish, to go forward, and the safety net to ensure that we would not fail in initiative up. I look forward to seeing a daycare that's going to be inclusive for all kids, regardless of income, regardless of background. I want to see it grow, and I want to see it to be a major, major asset to Liverpool. And that's what we're going to work for. This girl is amazing. I don't want to say how amazing she is, but she was able to come up with a couple of dollars along the lines that maybe she won't even need me, and I'll be very happy for her. I have to thank the women in this room, Annabelle and Cheryl and so on and so forth. If I'm ever in jail, I need you guys to be able to you guys talk really, really good, and that's nice to see. Oh, and I'm sorry, I forgot. I appreciate it. Pardon my loving wife, who always agrees with everything I say. I think back to the summertime when Heather was doing her vibe. Well, Heather, are you feeling the vibe now? Maybe not in the right direction or the direction you were hoping for, but as you can see, there's a lot of passion around this issue. And I would suggest, after Emma's presentation, I've been up around the holding complex there, sneaking around, taking a look and so on and so forth. And I can assure you, if you sell me that for a dollar, we'll be selling fish out of there within a year. And that's my promise.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. Very appreciated. And council has been very supportive of the daycare, and we're pleased of the result that we've managed to reach. So daycare is very important to Queenstown. Any other member of the gallery would like to speak this evening?
Mary White, Big Kenneth again. I'm not a scientist. I don't have all the answers, that's for sure. But I'm awfully glad, no matter, I'm going to take all the lessons that we have, and we've gone through over the past little while with the subject of agriculture in this particular area, and make some lemonade and say thanks to everybody for being so interested and taking the time out of your schedule and everything to try to determine what the best way for us to go forward is with this particular subject. And I'm awfully glad that people want to determine what the actual truth is, because as with many things today, there are many things that go around that are not true. Even some things that we see that we for sure think have to be true, sometimes aren't. And we have to look for independent sources in order to get true facts, and we have to make logical decisions ourselves in order to do that. And certainly nobody here, probably more than me, wants this area to make money and be better off. And maybe nobody here but me, I need to say that, thinks that this area is such a large gem in the world, but I do. And one of my fellow PAC members, who's not here tonight, Robert Ross, who was a planner on the other coast, has said so. He agrees with me that this area is a gem. There are very few areas like this left in the world. We have many, many assets that are not being utilized in the natural resources. We've come through this area being supported by fishing, by boat building, by forestry. Now it's time that we stop looking at this area and Nova Scotia in general, as an area of desperation, where we need things that nobody else wants. If everybody else is kicking things out of their area, why would we want it? Let's look at that. If there's some science out there somewhere that says that this is good, finfish aquaculture in general, or finfish aquaculture in our area, I would certainly propose that the municipality make it public information on their website so that people can get what they believe or make their own opinions as to what the scientific truth is behind aquaculture and kingfish aquaculture and what it may or may not do to our area. Because currently I have seen many things that are not true, in my opinion, and facts that are not true about what is actually happening. One of my main concerns is the fact that we keep saying cook, cook, cook. Well, it really doesn't matter in our society who owns the fish farm. And today it might be cook, but because of our commercial credit industry, tomorrow they could be crook.
because it's only a piece of paper with another mark on it. So if you stop Cook, tomorrow they may make an application under Crook, or whatever the name they may be, excuse me, for using that sort of thing. Okay? Also, again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know a lot of technical terminology, but I have taken the time to read through the new aquaculture process. And I have to tell you, you have to be a lawyer in order to get through it. In my opinion, it's set up like a catch-22 situation where there is no way for a small community to ever win. Because if they win somehow by getting enough scientists and enough people to find a problem and find a loophole in their progressive system where they just go back over and over and say, well, no, that's not important, that's not substantially important to you, or whatever the case may be. Again, all they have to do, because it's now site-based, so each time somebody makes an application for a different site, you have to go through the same thing again. So if we don't like it, and we have, and somehow we manage to ward them off from being increased in front of Coffin Island, the next day they could make a proposal for a new site 20 feet down the road, and you would have to go through the same thing again. I think the Department of Agriculture should also, I think that Cook Agriculture and other aquaculture firms should actually go back to them, and they should tell them that they need to change this, because what they're actually doing is instead of people being upset about the aquaculture process, we're actually demonizing a particular outfit. Okay, when we say we don't want the aquaculture, we say we don't want Cook. But it's not Cook. Okay, some things that they do may be very good. I'm not saying that. But fin fish aquaculture is a thing all of its own. And it has some very unique problems that in the future, maybe like they said, they may fix. But for now, we already can look historically at what they've done in other parts of the world, even very close by. And if they do something that you don't like, you can't get rid of them. They're going to take you to court. It's not a matter of saying, bye-bye, see you later. They're going to fight you all the way down the road. Now, again, going back to what I said to begin with, of this place being a gem, 75% of the species at risk are in this particular area. We have Kedgy, we promote all of this good stuff and everything, yet we're going to let somebody come in and do something to our environment, but we can't see it. We can fight about somebody having a chicken, because we can see it and hear it and smell it. But if you can't see it and hear it and smell it, because there's 500,000 of them underneath the water, we're going to let them do that? Really? Okay. Most of the people that I find that are coming here, and I expect a big influx of population to this area soon, because it's someplace that you can't get anywhere else. People are coming here for a lifestyle. They can go anywhere and get a job. They can work from their home now. They want to be able to look out their window, and they want to be able to see pure, unadulterated beaches, you know, places they can walk. They don't want the stench of a fish farm in their backyard. And I think that if we want to give up that, the thing that we have left, the only thing I think that we have left as a resource to bring us up out of the poverty level that this Queen County has been in for a long time, then we deserve what we get. Because there's only so many beaches, there's only so much coastline, there's only so many areas like this. And I'd like to know how long it's going to take for the municipality to go through all the information that they've received and actually make a decision as to whether they're going to support us or not. Because there's only going to be a 10-day period if they do go ahead and apply for a license. There's only going to be a 10-day period with which that you can put in your notice to them that you have anything that you have against that, in order to be an intervener or whatever you want to call it. Now, maybe this municipal government is different than others, but 10 days isn't very long for a government to do anything, to make a decision at that point in time that you're going to say, oh, we really don't want that here. Furthermore, I'd like to know exactly where the municipality sees this particular area going so that I can make some decisions for my future life, too, because if it's going to be that we're going to open the coastline up to drilling, to fish farms, et cetera, et cetera, I may decide to go elsewhere. So again, I'd like to thank you for your time. I appreciate everything that everybody in this room does. I do not understand why there's such a big backlash in deciding what side we're going to be on as a municipality, and why there is not more transparency as to what has taken place. Apparently something took place with the province and Shelburne, I'm not sure. But it seems like the information isn't getting back to the people that want it. And I hate that people feel that it's always the same people that are making, you know, waves about things. We are always the same people. If you go to somewhere in Queens County where there are volunteers, they're always the same people. It's us. We're the doctors, the first responders, the lawyers, the daycare owners, the businessmen. We're the people that care about the community. We're the people that have spent our time to try to make this into a place where people want to spend their retirement, bring their young families, and settle down. And I really hope that we can all pull together and do that. Thanks again.
Thank you, Ms. White. I want to thank all of those in the gallery that spoke this evening. It's very beneficial to be able to come to council and express your views and comments. And with that, we're going to move on the agenda. We're going to go to 6.0.